nationally recognized speaker, facilitator, and author Steve Klein sits down with the most fascinating difference makers in Dallas-Fort Worth. Hear from top CEOs, local entrepreneurs, and key playmakers in business right now with your host, Steve Klein.
Vince Lombardi said, "The quality of a person's life is in direct proportion to their commitment to excellence." Hi, I'm Steve Klein, and welcome to Playmakers Talk Show. In the studio today are two guests who commit to excellence. Our first Playmakers company is the nation's leading permanent physician placement service, while our second Playmakers company dates back to 1921. With us today is a Playmaker that provided testimony as an expert witness before the House Committee on Small Business, while our next Playmaker is CEO of a business that is not the big company. These great playmakers are Mark Smith. Mark is president of AMN Healthcare's Physician Recruiting Division, Merritt Hawkins. And Drew Clancy. Drew is president and CEO of Publishing Concepts, and we're going to begin today's show with Drew. As I said, Drew Clancy is president and CEO of Publishing Concepts, the nation's leading publisher of printed alumni directories and online alumni communities. PCI is a third-generation family business and dates back to the Rockwell F. Clancy Company, which was the nation's first alumni directory publisher back in 1921. Today, PCI works with many of the nation's top universities, including Harvard, Georgetown, SMU, Texas A&M, and Texas Tech. Drew graduated magna cum laude from Amherst College and earned his MBA from the Northwestern Kellogg School of Management. Drew, welcome to Playmakers Talk Show.
Great to be here.
Well, in addition to Texas, and you've lived in Texas for a while, I understand you were also born in Chicago, but you've lived in Massachusetts when you were at in school, and you were at Northwestern, so you were in the Chicago area. How did the Chicago Cubs become a favorite team?
Well, I spent my first 11 years living in the Chicago area, and became a Chicago Cubs fan at that point. Some would say it's an affliction, actually, over 100 years without winning a World Series.
But now you weren't around back then.
I was not, no. But very much the eternal optimist, and things are actually looking pretty good for the Cubs these days. We're looking for big things in the next couple of years.
Well, if nothing else, the Cubs have a tremendous amount of fans being the lovable losers.
Absolutely.
Well, you are with a company that publishes alumni directories. This is not something that people think a lot about until they actually are offered one or want to get one. Tell us a little about that. Your grandfather started the company back in 1921. There's a little change there because that went away and your new company was started. But talk a little bit about how your grandfather started that and why he started it back in the early 20s.
Sure. Well, he actually went to Northwestern, so I was back in Chicago for graduate school. And my grandfather, actually had gone to Northwestern as well. And he was an entrepreneur, and so shortly after graduating from college, he wanted to start a business, and got involved in the publishing business and started working. Northwestern was an early client, and started doing these directories. Originally, it was for cities, so it would be the Northwestern Club of Chicago or the Harvard Club of Chicago, that type of thing. But through the years, as computers came along and databases and so forth, today we do the full alumni directory for, you mentioned a number of our clients. Obviously, we're strong here in Texas, but really all across the country. And what we're really passionate about is engaging our clients' alumni or membership. And ultimately, that helps them raise money to support their mission, which is education. So,
well, if you're going with that engagement, you're moving from passive to active, where it now becomes alive. Because I noticed that you will do a lot of online services, too. Talk about how that interacts with the published printed alumni directory.
Sure. We were a pioneer, actually, in the online alumni directories. Today, it's much more than just online directories. It's online giving. It's online events, all sorts of things, actually. But underlying both the printed directory, right, which is a listing of all the alumni, and the online services, is that database. And that really is one of our core competencies at PCI, is working with that data and then updating that data, engaging those alumni, and getting their information up to date. So, and that's not only where they live, but where they work, their email address, perhaps their spouse, children, other degrees. All of that information, of course, is very valuable to the university.
having been in this business for a long time, your processes need to be pretty strong to get that much data to put in an alumni directory, because that's a tremendous amount of data per person times the number of people that have gone to that college over the years.
You bet.
You must have – your father restarted the company back in 1985. Is that correct?
82. Yes.
And I'm sure it was different back then because we didn't have the internet. It was, I'm sure, just printed.
Sure.
But you probably have very good processes to do that. You also have – I saw on your website – and by the way, the website is publishingconcepts.com. You do some fundraising. You tie that in with the colleges too. Tell us how that works.
Sure. Well, our first fundraising client actually was Texas A&M. And one of the things at PCI that we take a lot of pride in is our purpose, which is strengthening our nation's colleges and universities. And so about 5 years ago, we were talking with Texas A&M about doing another printed directory. And they said to us, we're very interested in doing this. We want to update our alumni database. But what we really would like to do is drive membership in the Century Club. And this is essentially a gift to the university. And so because we're very clear on our purpose, which is strengthening our nation's colleges and universities, we saw that as potentially a great idea. And so we ended up working with Texas A&M. We ended up generating over 8,000 new Century Club members through our project, raised just shy of $800,000 for Texas A&M, along with updating their database, along with producing a beautiful directory. That's proven to be a very popular model now, perhaps not surprisingly. And so we're doing that same process with a number of our other clients. So
you're not only the vendor for the school, but you're also a partner with the school by being able to do that.
You bet.
Now, I want to go back to something that I mentioned at the very beginning, because this is a big part of your business. You are not the big company.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
So not the big company is not a statement about growth, right? We are growing as a company. We've been very blessed, actually, and our business is growing. Not the big company is a mindset, right? It's a philosophy. It's a way of life. And all of us can probably relate to a situation where we've dealt with a big company, right, where we feel like a number, where there's lots of red tape, where it's hard to get an answer. And essentially at PCI, our workplace culture is really based around taking care of that individual, right? It's about relationships, not transactions. That's one of the things we say all the time at PCI. You know, Texas A&M or Texas Tech or SMU or Georgetown or all of our various clients, what they're contracting with us to do is engage with their alumni and to create a relationship with them. And so our not the big company philosophy is very much about that. That's really the phrase not the big company is actually relatively recent for us in the last, let's say, 7, 8, 9 years. But this way of doing business goes back many, many years to my grandfather, to my father. So it's very consistent. It's very authentic, if you will.
Well, not the big company is also on your website, which is Publishing Concepts, and that tells me you're basically relationship-oriented when you're working with your clients.
You got it. That's the name of the game.
I notice on your website that you have 7 elements and 7 client promises that you tie into. Tell us a little bit about these 7 elements with your business.
Sure. These are what we refer to as our client promises, right? And interestingly, I mean, having been around now for almost 100 years, businesses go through ups and downs. And in the late 90s, early 2000s, as sort of a young or inexperienced CEO at that time, we talked a little bit, Steve, about our online business. And I became very enamored with our online business and really thought that that would be our future and that perhaps our traditional business might sunset. And so we took our eye off the ball for a period of time, and we got away from that client-first experience. And these client promises came out of that time of adversity. We asked ourselves, and it was a conversation internally within the company, what do we need to do to really return to our roots and also propel us into the future? And so we asked our associates at that time, we said, If a new person was starting today, what is it you would want them to know about making every client referenceable? And so we gathered all of this information, and essentially we organized it, and these seven promises came out of that exercise. And today, in fact, yesterday, we had a new group of individuals join PCI, and on their very first day, I spent about 2 hours with them going over these client promises and just as quickly as possible trying to teach them about our philosophy and our approach to business at PCI. And these seven promises are really at the heart of that.
This is your corporate culture. This is what controls you. This is what everybody buys into.
You got it.
Or they don't stay around. You talked about being enamored by your online services. When you do business with a college, does that published book, does that published alumni mm-hmm. directory also go online?
In many cases, it does. So we really have two clients, if you think about it. We have the university or the association, because we do work with a number of associations, and then we have the alumni or the members, right? And for the university or the association, the primary reason they're doing this directory is all of this new information that we're going to collect as part of the process, essentially. And so this information, as we collect it, we return it back to the client, they put it into their database, and then it becomes available online as well. So absolutely, we're in the sort of data collection business, if you will, the relationship and data collection business.
So in addition to my purchasing a directory from the school, might I also, or does that come along with an online directory? Would that be something else I'd purchase, or is that up to the school to determine?
It's really up to the school. It's really up to the school. Sometimes, in many cases, the online directory is available for alumni of the school, typically for no charge. The printed directory, obviously, is something you're buying. But people buy the printed directories for all sorts of reasons. Obviously, it's in most cases, they're very proud of their alma mater. They proudly display that directory. It's a beautiful directory. It includes lots of other, information about the university and so forth. So the two complement each other.
So you are essentially the alumni version of LinkedIn or Facebook, where people can interact with each other once they get online and see a fellow student they hadn't seen in a while.
You bet. You bet. Well, both to reconnect perhaps with maybe an old friend, somebody they've lost touch with, or, of course, to use for business networking.
And that happens a lot. Again, Drew, tell us how anybody can get a hold of you or your company.
Probably the website is the best place to go. You can call us, send me an email, and we'd love to talk with people.
Publishingconcepts.com is the website to go to. You can also check their phone number and website out on PlaymakersTalkShow.com website. Drew, thank you very much for being a part of Playmakers Talk Show.
My pleasure. Thank you, Steve.
Drew Clancy is president and CEO of Publishing Concepts. And we're going to take a short break. We'll be back right after this. Stay with us. Oh, by the way, don't go away, because we have Mark Smith. He is a president of AMN Healthcare's Physician Recruiting Division of Merritt Hawkins. We're going to talk about that and more right after this.
Operation Kindness is the oldest and largest no-kill animal shelter here in North Texas. Each day, its staff and volunteers care for an average of 300 homeless dogs and cats in its shelter in Carrollton, plus 100 more animals living in foster homes throughout the Metroplex. Learn how you can adopt, donate, or volunteer with this nonprofit group by visiting their website at operationkindness.org or by calling 972-418-7297. operationkindness.org.
Join the fight against childhood cancer by joining the 29th annual Oktoberfest Run for Children on Saturday, September 20th. This family-friendly event is part of Addison's annual Oktoberfest celebration, with all proceeds benefiting Wipe Out Kids Cancer, a Dallas-based nonprofit dedicated to raising awareness and funding for childhood cancer research and to providing hope and support to children with cancer. There's a one-mile fun run and a 5K course, cash prizes, free food, German beer, awards, and entertainment. Also, receive one free admission to Oktoberfest on race day. Register at Oktoberfest5k.com.
And welcome back to Playmakers Talk Show. Our guest this segment is Mark Smith. Mark is president of AMN Healthcare's Physician Recruiting Division, Merritt Hawkins, the nation's largest and most recognized physician search and consulting firm. AMN Healthcare is the largest healthcare staffing organization in the United States and the innovator of healthcare staffing solutions. Mark has over 25 years of experience with Merritt Hawkins and served as vice president of the firm's Eastern Regional Office in Atlanta prior to relocating to its corporate office in Dallas. He's responsible for strategic planning and operation for Merritt Hawkins. Mark, welcome to Playmakers Talk Show.
Thank you for having me, Steve.
Well, you've been with Merritt Hawkins for about 25 years, and Merritt Hawkins is around 27 years old. Goes back a little ways. What was the physician placement service like back a quarter of a century ago?
Well, probably the best word to describe that, Steve, would be unrecognizable to what it is today. Looking back when I started in 1988, so much technology was obviously different. We did not have the internet. We didn't have the gadgets that keep us so connected now to make it so much easier to reach physicians and clients. Another big thing was regulation. There were times I hear stories back from before I started. It's a bit of the Wild West. What you could do to attract a physician and bring them to a given community was really without limitation, just a matter of what kind of resources a given facility had. And that's been regulated at multiple levels over the last number of years and is much, much tighter. And I would say the next level is professionalism. Really, there was no threshold for entry into the business. And so if you had a Rolodex and a cell phone or an extra room in your house, you could open a physician staffing firm and be Mark Smith and Associates if you so chose. And today, the expectation that I believe that Merritt Hawkins has developed over the years is the investment we've made in our people, the training, the expertise, and the professionalism that's come along during that time.
Not only that, the medical field was different back then, too. You have a lot more specialties right now. It's more segregated than it was before. There's a lot more information. So your business has changed tremendously when Merritt Hawkins started.
No question. The job that was described to me when I interviewed shortly after college was basically we'd fly somewhere, we'd get a rental car, and we'd drive 2 hours. And when we got to that town, then we'd find them a family physician, and that pretty much was about 90% of what we did. Today, fast forward 25, 26 years, and we're working in essence, every city in the country, whether it be large, small, every specialty you could imagine, some that I hadn't heard of until recently, but it has become much more specialized.
Well, Merritt Hawkins started as a very small company back 27 years ago. And by the way, the website is Merritt, M-E-R-R-I-T-T, Hawkins, H-A-W-K-I-N-S.com. And correct me if I'm wrong, based on the history on your website, about six people started that company, and that's how it got going about 27 years ago. And it's grown tremendously since then.
It has. Today, we have about 180 employees just in the Merritt Hawkins division, still a small piece of AMN Healthcare, which has over 2,000 employees, but some we're very proud of. During that time, Merritt Hawkins continued to evolve. So we saw tremendous growth over the years. Much like everyone, I think, when we saw the financial crisis at the end of 2008, we felt some challenges there and really took that opportunity to redevelop ourselves and redesign who we were as an organization and hold on to our roots, but be prepared for when things came out of that dark time, and it was something we were very ready for.
Well, your company, Merritt Hawkins, fills more permanent physician jobs than any other firm. But you have as we were talking earlier, a little bit of a niche. You do a lot of surveys. Your company does a lot of surveys about the physician market and the medical field. You just had one that came out. Tell us about that one and why it was so relevant.
The reason that was so important is with an organization that we have partnered with in the past, a Physician Foundation. It's a group that's well-funded, but they're in a position to really help physicians and improve the marketplace in which they're in. So one of the ways that we do that is by making the general population aware of the circumstance physicians face. That recent survey had over 20,000 physicians respond. It was nearly a 40-question survey. What was amazing, one, to see that kind of response, but in addition, at the end of the survey, and if you've taken plenty of surveys, I'm sure you're always ready for those to be done, was that there was an opportunity for free text and to put your thoughts. It could have been a few words. It could have been multiple paragraphs. But 13,000 physicians took the opportunity to do that. So it's very interesting for us to see that and the results that it generated.
Well, that was two-thirds of all the physicians that responded to the survey, which is absolutely tremendous. Well, one of the things from your 2014 review of Physician Advanced Practitioner Recruiting Incentives says that Dallas has the shortest wait time in the country for patients scheduling appointments with physicians. Why?
It's a great question. I think if you look at the offset, look at the city that has the longest wait time. That'd be Boston. 66 days, I believe, to see certain specialties. And if you think about that, they have universal care and have had that now for several years. I believe that 97% of their population is covered by some form of insurance. They have the most training programs within the area, the most doctors within the area, but yet they have the longest wait times. So For us, I think our concern is it could be indicative of the future we have coming our direction, with the entire country having a version of universal health care and having unvetted, unlimited access, and what that could mean for the rest of the population in terms of having to wait. I believe Americans are going to begin to learn the word queue. Not everyone knows what that means, but it is coming our direction.
Well, apparently from the survey, part of the reason why we have the shortest wait time is we also have the lowest average rate of Medicaid acceptance among doctors, only 23%. Boston has the highest at 73%, which is opposite the other. Why do so few doctors accept Medicaid?
The issue that I find with Medicaid and the physicians I've spoke with over the years is that the Medicaid reimbursement occurs at less than break-even cost. So in essence, for them to see a Medicaid patient, it costs them money in a traditional practice setting. So very difficult if you are the owner of a business and if you said, I want you to sell this certain product, but you will lose money on this, you have to limit how much of that you'll see. I find physicians across the board all see a certain level of Medicaid or indigent, but they've had to, unfortunately, just due to financial necessity, limit how much of that they can take. And that population has grown. We added 5 million people across the company to the Medicaid rolls. So those folks are clamoring to get to see physicians. It's going to create a demand issue. And that, as you'll see, I mean, the reason we got in the survey business is because the oldest government survey about the number of physicians available is from the early 1980s, and none has been done since that time.
We're looking at 30 years. You also mentioned that the oldest baby boomers at 65, 10,000 are turning 65 every day. So the Medicare, Medicaid issue is very important to them. But in addition, I noticed that the physician-to-population ratio, Dallas is the lowest at 197.2 physicians per 100,000 people, and the average is 226. Why is Dallas so popular for physicians?
Well, Dallas is a great place to live. It's one of the reasons we moved our corporate headquarters here, centrally located, very low cost of living. It's very business-friendly. You don't have to pick up too many newspapers to see the number of companies moving to Texas and to Dallas specifically. And so we see that. And obviously Texas has chosen not to participate so far in the expansion of Medicaid. And I do think that has had a significant impact here as well in terms of both the wait times. Regardless of your position politically, it certainly has made it easier for access for those that have more traditional insurance.
Well, you went to Washington back about 2 years ago to provide testimony for the House Committee on Small Business. You were an expert witness, and the hearing was on the decline of small and solo medical practices. What was your testimony all about? What were you telling Congress?
Well, what we discussed the most was why we were so surprised. I was there to discuss the declining physician practice, and the reality of it was it had already been given a death sentence. And that it had declined, and it was no longer a viable option to operate that way. And so small business committees looked at this and says, what can we do? I believe my response was, I think you've done enough. But it was interesting to see the separation between what was occurring on Main Street versus what was occurring at the Capitol.
Well, let's look in the future a little bit, 5, 10, 15 years. Where is the physician market going?
Being a physician is still, you know, an excellent career choice. We see it in our surveys. Well, and overall, you see that there's quite a bit of unrest in physicians and not necessarily a tremendous amount of excitement. We do see that improving. I think much of that's got to change in terms of the models. In the very beginning, as you mentioned, changes back when Merritt Hawkins started, almost everyone was on some form of a loan or an income guarantee where the physician had a liability. And today, 97% of my placements are employee-based, where you receive a salary or a salary and a bonus. And so you're going to see a physician that now works for somebody else. The downside of that is, when you lose that entrepreneur piece, it typically backs down your engagement. Give an example, the survey you mentioned. We noticed over the last 2 years, physicians across the country see half a patient less a day. First glance, that's really not a big deal. Until I did the math. That's 96 million fewer patient visits a year.
That's a big impact, tremendous impact. Well, I had my first surgery about six and a half months ago, and I went to a newer hospital in the Dallas area. But I've also noticed there's a tremendous amount of new hospitals popping up all over, not only in Dallas, North Texas, but the entire state of Texas. Why are we – obviously, Texas and Dallas are a great place to be, as you mentioned. Is that one of the reasons why we have some new hospitals going up?
Most definitely. It's one of the reasons you see that expansion of those new facilities. It's a very prosperous area. You have a very highly insured population. There's also a large uninsured population, which not necessarily all of these facilities are going to cater to. So you do have that upper echelon, if you will, to attract. And also, in general, the ACA has been positive for most hospitals when they're receiving at least some compensation for the care previously that had just been completely uncompensated.
Well, the surveys your firm does gives you a tremendous amount of information. You can provide this to your clients also. Are there any specific specialties that you work within in Merritt Hawkins, or is it the entire broad spectrum of physicians?
It really is the entire broad spectrum of physicians. We have intensified certain areas over the last couple of years. Two areas that have taken on a tremendous level of growth for us is in academic search efforts, working with universities. As you know, we're expanding our medical schools, expanding the size of those classes. Of course, that's going to need more folks in administration and at a teaching level, and also at the physician executive. We've heard of these new models, accountable care organizations, ACOs, and medical homes. Well, these require physician leaderships, and in general, there haven't been that many physician leaders. Physicians have focused on providing clinical care. And so a big part of our business now has been recruiting physicians to step into leadership and become a part of the answer.
Merritt Hawkins is the name of the firm. MerrittHawkins.com is the website. And I also notice on the website there's a tremendous amount of information should you want to – another surveys and white papers actually about this business. So people can get a tremendous amount of information just going from your website.
Absolutely. And that is something we feel that we want to provide our clients and really the entire industry to show what's happening, to bring attention to the needs of physicians and needs of our hospitals and clients. Anything we can do to help that line, we're grateful to be able to do so.
We've obviously, as we mentioned earlier, developed a niche that separates you from other physician staffing firms, and you're doing something different. It increases your credibility tremendously.
There's no doubt being a thought leader in the industry, which is really the position that we've hoped to take over the last quarter century, has helped us not only become better at our jobs and to educate our clients better, but just impact the entire industry itself and raising that standard that's expected of those who perform our service.
Tremendous information. Mark, thank you very much for being a part of Playmakers Talk Show.
Thank you for having me.
Mark Smith is president of AMN Healthcare's Physician Recruiting Division, Merritt Hawkins. You can also check them out at Merritt, M-E-R-R-I-T-T, Hawkins.com. My name is Steve Klein. This has been a terrific show. Thank you very much for joining us. Join us at PlaymakersTalkShow.com, where you can get all of our replays and past episodes. That's PlaymakersTalkShow.com. And we are going to be back next week with more Playmakers. See you then.
Who will Steve be interviewing next? Find out on Playmakers Talk Show with Steve Klein every Friday afternoon at 3 on 770 KAAM. Hear this interview again by going to Steve's website, PlaymakersTalkShow.com.